Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And I have a new website. It's simonbowne.com. That's Bowne, not Brown. It replaces the Past Lives Hypnosis website, and you can go to this new website for past life regression, as well as info on my books and podcasts. This week, I'm talking to Crystal Cassidy about her near-death experience, her other spiritual experiences, and her app, the Soul Pod. Hi, Crystal. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Excited to be here, Simon.
We're going to talk about your near-death experience and other experiences you've had. I wanted to start off talking about things that happened before your near-death experience, and you had a Kundalini awakening. Could you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, I have been a meditator for a good chunk of my life. I started off with martial arts and was a reluctant meditator to begin with because that was part of the training. But in 2015 or somewhere around there, I was meditating. And you're kind of run-of-the-mill. I was doing a little bit of breath work and about 20 minutes in. And the best way I can describe it is as a central channel activation, because it seemed very tied to my spinal column. And I started to feel this, it's like a spiritual heat. It's not hot in the realms of temperature. It was hot in the realms of, it felt like a lot of energy in my pelvis and it was building. And I had learned enough at that point to allow the experience to the best of my abilities rather than trying to understand it or control it. And so I continued to breathe and it continued to build. And kind of counterintuitively, because we often think of meditation as being a calming experience, this was very much a whole nervous system activation. Heart rate increased, blood pressure was increasing. And it started to move up my spinal column to about my lower back area, and then it stopped. And I know for some people, it continues to move all up at once, but in my case, it moved up from energy center to energy center over years, and this was just the beginning. And I'm grateful for that, because each time it started to move, I would learn so much and my life would shift. But the other part of that experience that goes hand in hand with it is the first time that I felt oneness. Not a belief of oneness, which I already believed, but a knowing of it, sensing it, witnessing it, connecting into everything. And that profound oneness state of being, I was in that for about an hour. And I was simply witnessing. I remember sitting next to my window in San Francisco and just watching people on the street below, because I could sense the connectivity between all of it. And that changed my life, as you can imagine. You can't unknow or unsee that. And it really set the foundations for what was already a deep curiosity of mine, but it really expanded from there. And I went on a deep dive into all of these teachings and realms and experiences of consciousness.
And when that happened, you had a career in science, didn't you? Which is notoriously against this kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I studied biochemistry in school. I worked in clinical research. I worked in cancer diagnostics, ultimately. So a lot of my career in oncology. And at the time, I was actually working at a biotech startup in the Bay Area. And it's very interesting, because as that, you can call it an awakening experience or whatever you want to call it, Kundalini activation, my life started to shift around me and new opportunities were coming in. And it took a few years of kind of navigating this in-between space, because what became very apparent to me was that my work in the sciences was done, which was really inconvenient for my life because I was reaching quite a bit of success at that time and could, you know, get a job in wherever I wanted to some degree. So it didn't make much sense on paper why I started to really focus on meditation, on consciousness. But the people that knew me also understood that that curiosity runs deep in the scientific realm as well. That's the rubric of science, is to get to the truth. And so maybe ironically, the further I got into my spiritual development, the more I realized that the modality of science is very supportive. And I think we've oriented ourselves to it being combative, and it has been. It's mostly scientists who coined the term woo-woo to begin with in the 90s. So I understand the tension, but I think that we're going to find that there's so much more alignment with this experience of consciousness, which even in the last 10 years, science is starting to open its mind to some of these maybe not intuitive theories, where it doesn't seem as logical, the universe, as maybe we thought 50 years ago, the quantum components. And I'm lucky to have some friends in quantum physics in the Bay Area, and I keep hearing how close they think that we are to better understanding the nature of consciousness. So I think that there's going to be increasing synergy between these two realms of experience. But there's also, in my own experience, there's always going to be an aspect of the universe or this reality that we cannot understand from the perspective that we are currently in. And so I really like to hold that as well, is that there's a mystery here. And it's fun trying to figure it all out, and we can use science for a lot of that. And then it's also, I think, really healthy to have a balance there of not knowing and being okay with that as well.
And do you feel meditation helps give a good viewpoint, from a certain viewpoint, of what's happening that you wouldn't get in, like, in a lab?
Absolutely. So I think in the lab, maybe the fallacy there that we've gotten rather caught up with in the last couple hundred years is, if you take a really simple experiment, your petri dish, and you're growing bacteria, we've taken ourselves out of that equation. We peer down into the petri dish, and we get rid of all the other possible variables that are not pertinent to the question or the hypothesis that we have. And I think what we're finding now is you can't take the observer out of the equation. Maybe from some level, and I think this is true in spiritual development, and you discover this in meditation, that truths lie within larger truths. And this is really synonymous with what Stephen Hawking's last theory was talking about, that relativity is what emerged from a quantum universe. And so if you take that down to the micro level, then yes, in some ways you can isolate that experiment down to as many controllable aspects as you possibly can. And what we're learning is ultimately there is another part to these equations we've been ignoring, which is consciousness itself, the observer. Hawking's called it interaction. So whatever you want to call that, we are now learning that you can't take it out of the experience. And so in meditation, my favorite definition for meditation is to become familiar with. And what's so powerful about that definition is that you become familiar with different things at different times in that journey. And at first, it's the nature of your own mind. Most of us are not aware that we're not our thoughts. And to start to turn that light of awareness inwards is very daunting at first. There's nothing easy about it. There are tools, there are modalities, but ultimately it takes courage to start to turn that inwards. And at some points in the journey, you don't necessarily like what you see. Certain aspects of your personality that have been built up over the years that you were unaware of. Meditation is all of that. It includes all of it. And then as you open the aperture of your consciousness further and further, and you can let more and more light in, you start to become aware of or familiar with other realms of experience that are beyond the physical. And then all of these different realms start to merge in really weird, trippy ways. That's the best way I can put it. And, you know, after meditating for as long as I have, over a decade every day now, that is just the most fascinating journey, because your world gets so much bigger. That aperture can open further than most of us are aware of. And, you know, what I'm really passionate about now is helping our species realize our interdimensionality, that we are truly non-physical beings at our essence, having a physical experience. And meditation is that way of being that can start to open that up for you when you're ready.
And you had, is it one past life connection while in meditation or more? But could you give us detail on a past life that you connected to in meditation?
Yeah, I have had probably three core past life remembrances. One was actually in a past life regression in a hypnotherapy session. And that was a rather difficult lifetime to remember. I was back in tribal times and had been ostracized from the tribe. And the reason being is I had gotten pregnant by somebody in the tribe and had been abused. And so it was just a really sad lifetime. But that woman, she was very spiritually attuned. So people thought she was weird, you know, playing with snakes and animals, and had this very witchy vibe to her. And that made people uncomfortable at that time. And after witnessing that, and I witnessed her death and her child that she had raised, you know, I came out of that and I was like, why did I need to see that? It was pretty dramatic. But over some time integrating it, I realized it had given me such a gift, given me permission to not let that fear of being ostracized stop me in this lifetime. She was saying to me, that's not how it has to be now. So don't let this. So it really released a deep-seated fear that I don't think I was aware of. That's why I think this hypnotherapy work that you do is so important. It helped to bring that to the surface and integrate it in a way that was beyond the analytical mind, but conscious. And that kind of propelled me forward in really big ways from there. I'm actually using that character in a book that I'm writing based on my past life. It was during my near-death experience when I was in between these realms, and I actually saw him in meditation before I had gotten sick, which was very unusual. And I had seen flashes of this time, looked like in Europe, and almost like a Viking type of culture. And I was a man and had gone off to war, and there was a pandemic happening at the same time. And he had been injured, but then returned to his home, and his whole family had died from the virus. And so I saw him over time becoming very bitter, very sad, very angry. and a bit of a hermit. And the really trippy thing about that was, as I got sicker, and then I started getting quite unwell in the hospital and in quarantine, and I worked with him for probably about 3 months of that time. And I knew when I first got sick that it was karmic. I knew there was no avoiding it. I knew it was coming for me. And that's a very weird feeling as well. I don't necessarily wish that on anybody, but it changed my life. So I can't necessarily be upset about it either. But over time, I noticed that there was some sort of connection between that lifetime and mine. I don't know exactly what it was, but I knew that the decisions I was making now were affecting his lifetime and vice versa, because I think they're all simultaneously happening. And over that time, when I started to recover, and it took me about a year, but as I started to finally come out of the acute phase of the illness, and I knew I was going to be okay, I started to see his lifetime shift. And one of the last times that I saw him, I was looking at him from above, and it was him with a new family, and he had become a teacher in the community, and he was happy, and he just looked up into the sky, kind of from the point of view that I was looking down. And that was the last time I saw that lifetime. So it was very, very beautiful, very challenging, and I haven't ever had quite an experience like that one as I did with that lifetime, in that it was such an ongoing relationship for a period of time.
So it was like he looked up and looked at you.
Yeah, yeah. I still get chills.
Before you had the near-death experience, did you have any like psychic or mediumship talents?
Not as much psychic. That started to develop after. But I was having what I now know to be communication with interdimensionals and extraterrestrials. So that was starting up in about 2012. So that type of, you could, I guess, call it psychic connections with these beings. And I was certainly being guided by them in some ways. So that before the near-death experience, that was probably the most prominent.
So can you tell us about the near-death experience? How did it start?
Yeah, I was sick in 2020, so you can guess what that was. And yeah. I, before the pandemic came on, I think it was like in January, was when I started having the premonitions of something coming and this past life coming into my experience. And so I could feel it before it really came into our physical experience. And I was working in this city, San Francisco, trying to help us get ready for it on the public health side. And I remember the moment I started to get sick, it was a knowing that this was going to be hard. And I ended up in quarantine. I was in the hospital. My cardiovascular system was failing. My neurological system was struggling. It was so early on that the doctors didn't know what to do. And having to say goodbye to my husband at the hospital door, getting wheelchaired in, is still one of the hardest moments of this lifetime that I've experienced, because I didn't know if I was going to see him again. And the doctors ultimately gave me a choice, and they said, you know, we can give you this drug. To this day, I don't even remember what the drug is. I know it had something to do with inflammatory and antivirals, but we don't know whether it's going to make it worse or not. And so it's up to you. And so I got the nudge. I said, okay, well, one way or another, I'm going to get through this. So let's just do it. And so I said yes to the drugs.
It seems like they're the doctors. They're the health experts, the professionals.
Yeah.
They should be the ones to decide, shouldn't they?
I agree. I agree. I don't think I've ever heard. I mean, you know, doctors do ask if you're of sound mind. especially if it's experimental. And it was at that time, to their credit. So I kind of understand why they asked, because they didn't have the data. And at that point, you know, the messaging was that something even like ibuprofen could make it worse. And they're really trying to avoid you getting on a ventilator, because that was proving to be not good in this case. And so, yes, it was a lot to put on a patient, and it was extremely scary. And there was so much of me coming from biotech, I was trying to hack my way to the answer, right? Well, if this, then that, and if, you know, we can figure out this drug, or, and I was talking to all my doctor friends as well. And ultimately, I had this moment, and this is where I started moving in between the realms. I didn't go into the light, but I was in so much pain in my body. I started to come out of it. And I remember there's this one moment that I experienced a level of surrender that I had never experienced before. And now I have a healthy, deeper reverence for what it means to surrender. And in that moment of surrender that kind of like blossomed forward, something happened. Many things happened all at once, it felt like. And in retrospect, my theory is that once I surrendered, it got rid of all of the resistance to the experience, which is the noise. And it allowed something to come in and meet me. And so I remember kind of from my higher self, because it wasn't exactly in my conscious mind, it was like from behind it, called out for help. Like, we need some help here, was the kind of vibe. An instant response. And something was with me in my energy body, outside of my body, but I could also feel its presence with my physical body, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I suppose.
And
so.
This, yeah. It's pretty trippy. And this being, which I believe to be highly intelligent, unconditionally loving, this presence is probably a better word for it. It started to help me. And I could feel this echo between the physical and the non-physical as it did something, activated my first energy center, the very base of my spine where my Kundalini awakening had originated, and then the space between my eyebrows, and then my heart space. So it went like 1, 2, 3. And then I was back in my body, sitting there in this kind of like just profound appreciation. And I knew at that point that I was going to be okay. I had a long road afterwards, but that was a very transformative moment. And the other part of that experience that only made sense years later, because it involved some time travel, was that as I started to be able to walk again, I had gone out on our fire escape when I finally got home, and I could walk towards it and open the door and sit down. And I remember looking up at the sky, and it was this incredible color blue. And I had this moment of just deep presence. And it was so profound and simple that I thought back on it over the years and was like, that was just a really simply profound moment. And I felt supported, and I felt like I was again going to be okay. And in meditation about a year ago, I was doing a 4-hour meditation. And in that meditation, this wave came and picked me up in it. And I landed on that fire escape, standing up, looking at my past self sitting there. And I realized that what was happening in that moment was I was sensing my future self and everything that I had done. And I was in the future, I was sending all of that love and appreciation and witnessing towards sick me. And that was just really put into perspective for me that what is healing you or what you can access is sometimes you. It's just you from another perspective coming into the experience. And there's a transmission that can happen. But in that meditation, I walked around my old apartment for a bit and then came back. But it was really full circle for me in so many ways.
Yeah, you connected to yourself in the past when you were there, and then you went back and connected to your future self.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things you said before is that this near-death experience was one of your exit points. Is that like an exit point you'd plan out before you were born, and you'd have a number of them?
I could sense that, yeah. I could sense that there was another timeline very close in proximity where I left. And I should also mention that when death is near, which I could feel it, and it was such an interesting relationship, because I always call it, it's like a long-lost friend showing up at your door unexpectedly. You know, you're like, oh, I remember you. And it didn't feel ominous, but it felt very, very proximate. And you know it when you meet it. You know that it's close. And I could sense that timeline. And there was, I believe, a choice to be made, and I believe it was my choice, if I wanted to go through this experience, and it was not going to be easy, and it was going to take me over a year to be able to do the things I used to be able to do. But I decided to stay. And one of my teachers actually helped me understand that, because I was a little confused afterwards, because I didn't think I had a fear of death. So what was I motivated by? And he told me, he said, you didn't have a fear of death. You had a fear of not living your purpose in this lifetime. That's what caused you to stay. And as soon as he told me that, it resonated deeply. And I knew that's exactly what it was. I was not ready to go yet. I didn't want to start over in another body and go through all the things. Like, I could do this. I could do this hard thing and persevere and live my purpose. And so it became very clear to me after this experience where I was going to spend my time and the risk that I was going to take and what was calling to me, I was going to be paying very close attention to. And that's really been my journey since then.
So the presence that was with you kind of prevented your death, made sure you wouldn't die in this life.
I believe so, yeah.
And do you have an idea of who this presence was?
I think so. My intuition has always been that it was Yogananda, his consciousness, or some variation thereof, an ascended master. Because he was very present in my mind at the time. I had been reading his book before this all happened. I don't think that was a mistake. And so the presence felt grand and big. So I'm always hesitant to give it a name, which sometimes feels like I'm limiting what it actually is. But I do believe that there was a connection with that intelligence and that healing that I received from the yogic masters, from Yogananda, or that group of ascended masters.
And do you feel you still have a connection with them?
Oh, very much so. Yes. Yogananda's been a beloved teacher and guide of mine in the non-physical. He has guided me to other teachers in the physical that I had no idea were connected in really beautiful ways. So it's certainly been a part of the vein of my personal evolution. Yeah.
So was there any part of that near-death experience where you were like floating above your body, looking down on it?
Yeah, there was some of that shift in perspective, almost similar to when I saw the past life from above. And that witnessing outside of the experience. But it felt to me very grainy, very dreamlike. But like there was still this connection, this river to the body.
And you didn't have that kind of thing where you saw somebody do something and you could tell them later and they could confirm it.
No, I was all by myself in that experience.
And so was it like you were in a coma at the time, or you didn't get into a coma with this illness?
Not technically. I don't believe they ever diagnosed me with a coma, but I was in and out of consciousness because my lungs were severely damaged. And so I was pretty close to going into that direction of needing more direct support. But no, it was never technically in a coma.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom. Have you ever felt a pull toward a place, a person, or a pattern in your life that you just can't explain? Past life regression can be a deeply healing and insightful experience, helping you explore the stories, emotions, and connections that may be shaping who you are today. Whether you're seeking clarity, emotional release, or a deeper understanding of your soul's journey, a session can open the door to powerful personal insight. To find out more or to book a session, visit simonbown.com. Hello, Simon here. I wanted to ask you about this word surrender, because for a lot of us that means, okay, I give up, I won't put up any fight. But did it mean something different than that for you?
Absolutely. And I think it will really behoove us to re-engineer our relationship to that word, because you're right. When we think of surrender, we're thinking about in the context of war and one people is giving over to another people. But no, my experience of surrender, and I think the book, The Surrender Experiment, also kind of talks about this, is that it is a giving forward rather than a giving up. It's a giving forward to life itself instead of resisting and living in your separation. It's giving forward to the unknown. It's reconnecting with who it is that you really are, which is beyond the physical body. And when you start to realize that connection, all of this resistance around the experience starts to dissolve. And so I see surrender as being a great dissolver. And it's just because that connection's always there, right? So when you dissolve that resistance, what you're left with is what's true. It's who it is that you are and the nature of this reality. That's what's left when you surrender. And so it's a immense tool to learn how to start to work with. And this requires some faith. It requires some trust. And especially when you're in the contraction of a lot of pain or the unknown, that trust and faith can be harder to access. But when surrender comes in, it's just connecting you to that. It's connecting you to that inherent knowing of who it is that you really are in your relationship to the rest of the universe and beyond. So it's incredibly powerful. And that's why in meditation, when I'm teaching about focus types of meditation, which is when you're following your breath, you're visualizing mantra, all of that's focused. Then there's the unfocused meditation. And that's harder to describe, but that's surrender. That's when you're just surrendering into the experience in becoming it. And that's when you can meet the transcendent experience, the mystical experience, where everything is possible, that field-based experience. It requires that trust and faith through surrender.
So do you feel the near-death experience could be described in any way as a spiritual kick up the pants? Change your life direction to put you on the track you should have been on?
I think there's all kinds of spiritual experiences that can be a kick up the pants. I think that the near-death experience is one of them. And I think that it's an incredible gift when you experience the tumult of life on this planet. That's why we've come here, is to experience it. And you get the gift of being able to perceive, even if just for a moment, the expansive nature of the self. I think that it's quite the gift. And I think that people that experience it, it can be an accelerant. I do think it's an accelerant, but you can also access those knowings through other ways, right? But there's so many of us that get caught up in our lives and you're not really doing that. And then I think these experiences can come in and be like, okay, well, if you're not going to lift the veil yourself, life will. And I really do see it as an accelerant. In a huge gift. I wouldn't be where I'm at without it.
And was there anything about your recovery that was miraculous? Because we do hear this with near-death experiences.
Well, I think the near-death experience and that healing experience itself was certainly miraculous. That's when I learned and embodied the knowing that assistance is within your reach at any time. Sometimes we just have to get out of our own way, which is the resistance to the experience. And so that really shifted my relationship to what it means to heal. And I will say, this is probably my favorite one as far as the physical healing experience, but I was diagnosed before all this when I was pretty young, early 20s. With a heart rhythm abnormality, not a detrimental one, not one that was going to cause me significant issues, but, you know, one that I'll get heart palpitations more easily than others, and just something that you want to watch as you get older. And so one of the things that I experienced in the year after that was quite a bit of chest pain, and they could never really figure out what that was. Had all kinds of tests. And over the years, and I've been doing quite a bit of spiritual work since then, about 6 months ago, I went to the doctor and I was having this sensation moving through my chest of it. It felt like warm honey, very warm, very visceral experience that was kind of freaking me out, to be honest. And so I went to the doctor to get it checked. And right before I did, I had a realization that maybe this feeling was healing. And that just because there's a sensation changing in the body doesn't necessarily mean that there's something wrong. And then I went into the doctor and they did a test and came back into the room and they said, you know, we're going to do another test with another machine because it's not showing your abnormal heart rhythm. And I said, okay. And they brought another machine. They did another test. And then they came back in and they said, you know what? You don't have the abnormal heart rhythm anymore. And I thought that was just so interesting because I was told that it would be something I would have for the rest of my life. It was not something that would resolve. And so I don't know if there's a connection to that warm honey feeling I was feeling in my chest or not, but it's certainly interesting.
And I hear from people who've had near-death experiences that it changes them in a fundamental way of how they relate to the people around them, and not just people they know, but strangers. becoming less judgmental and more empathetic. So do you find that happened with you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that started to happen with the Kundalini awakening and witnessing that connection with everyone. You start to look at everyone else as being just another finger on the glove of life. You know, we're connected by the palm, and maybe I'm the ring finger and you're the thumb, but we're really truly connected at the end of the day. And so, yeah, and I think after going through the fear to such a deep degree, you can't help but have so much compassion and empathy for the fear-based experience that people, all of us, experience on to some degree. And so I do think compassion, which is empathy with the desire to relieve suffering, has to come forward. And I also believe that the nature of service changed for me. I think maybe before, it seemed like you would be of service because it feels like the right thing to do, but that there was always an exchange of some sort. And I think after the NDE, my orientation towards service changed in that when you realize and embody the knowing that we're all connected, then service is serving the whole. It's serving you. It's serving the collective. And it's also self-service, of not self-abandoning anymore, and truly stepping into your bigness, your brightness, and also serving and doing what you can with others who are a part of you. So then it just makes sense to me. And it actually makes a lot more sense to me in the context of our galactic relationships, that if they know this, which they do, then them being involved in helping us in our evolution is serving them, because everything's connected. It just becomes obvious. So I would say that, yeah, the nature of service shifted pretty dramatically.
Well, could you tell us about the experience you had with the blue being that appeared?
Yes. So I have all kinds of experiences in meditation, and I started having these communications, and I was receiving them in meditation and writing them down, and had been for a long, long time, starting in 2012. And they had started to show me, or really initiate me, into a new level of communication through channeling. And so I saw this in my meditation, I experienced this initiation, and kind of put it on the shelf. Of like, oh, that's really interesting, but I don't know if I'm really going to do that. Didn't really ever set out to be a channel. And so I was in between meetings in the middle of the day in my living room, and I was sitting on the couch just taking a break for a moment. And this form materialized across from me. And it looked like an amorphous oval humanoid form coming in and out with a bluish purple outline. And immediately the intensity of the energy made me go into a meditative state. It was kind of like my bodily reaction to that amount of energy is I just closed my eyes and I was like, ooh, it was like a reverberation or a huge wave of energy. And the communication was very front of my mind. And they were basically sharing with me again what this channeled state was. It's within my free will. There's no requirement. It's up to me. But this is how it works. And I asked them a few other questions. And it was probably about 20 minutes. And one of the reasons I knew that I wasn't completely losing it was that my cat was locked in on this being as well. He was just staring at it, and his eyes were blinking like cats do when they're comfortable or they're in loving energy, which I found so fascinating. And I couldn't even get him to break gaze with this being. And it started to morph into a pretty big three-dimensional white gold sphere towards the end. And I started to panic a little bit because the energy was so intense that I was coming out of my body in many ways. And right when I was kind of hitting my limit, they retreated. And so they're very aware of what we're ready for and capable of handling. And that was the beginning of another level of relationship with this particular collective of interdimensional beings, non-physical beings.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that if you thought maybe is it a spiritual being or some kind of ET, but interdimensional is sort of both, isn't it?
I like the word interdimensional. They've told me that they primarily reside in what we would call the eighth dimension, but that they move through many different dimensions. They are primarily non-physical in form, but have had physical form. So they do understand the physical experience to a degree. And that they are also in relationship with many of the extraterrestrials that are in contact with us and me in different, more physical ways, that they are also their guides. And there's a communication there as well. And so, yeah, I understand them to be primarily non-physical in nature, but they can take form kind of like they did with me when it's necessary and helpful.
Well, I wanted to ask you about your ET contact. But first of all, I think this is related. Could you tell us about the Joshua Tree experience?
Oh, yeah. Good question. Yeah, that was an intense one. So I've had contact for quite a while, and I was leading a retreat in Joshua Tree, which is beautiful. It's just a very transformational space in and of itself. And I had taken a group out into the desert, and we had done a contact meditation, and there are kind of steps that start to happen, I've noticed, in sequences, and we experienced maybe the first few of those steps. And most people are very new to this experience. And the next night I went out with just me, myself, and a couple other teachers. So there's, I think, four of us. And we went out and we started to perceive the shifts that I typically see. Like it almost feels like a glass bowl goes over the group. Sound changes, all of a sudden there's humidity. We're in the desert, so that doesn't make any sense, right? So the environment starts to shift. And then we saw light from the ground up into the sky. I think a reddish light. And then a mist started to form over top of the group. Now, I never saw the mist, which I find really interesting. I was looking straight up, and they're saying it's coming down, it's coming down. And I'm not seeing anything. But then you could feel like they were around us. And everybody got very quiet. And then I was in a hammock. So we're laying in these hammocks. And my body starts getting lifted up in the hammock. And I'm like, ooh, okay. Even for me, this is new. This is different. And then my body started kind of bending to the right, into a moon shaped. And I wasn't doing the bending. And then I could feel a huge amount of energy starting to move through my body. And it was starting to make my body convulse, not in a painful way, but just in a way in which the body tends to respond when a lot of energy is moving through it and it's not accustomed to it. And so I was talking out loud to them. I said, "Oh, this is a lot." And I started to get a little nervous because I didn't quite understand what was happening. And I heard them in my mind and they said, we can stop at any time. But it would be like stopping in the middle of surgery. We'd prefer to continue and you can also handle it. You're going to do great. And I was like, okay, let's continue. And so that continued for quite a while. And then one of the teachers beside me had a thought before this all had happened that she was going to place her hands on me that night. And she was thinking that's such a weird thing to have thought. And then I turned to her and I said, can you put your hands on me and help move some of this energy? And she did. And she started shaking, but we were eventually able to stabilize it. And I finally was able to come up out of the hammock and it felt like they were complete and they withdrew from the area. And I stood up and I couldn't walk at first. It was like I had to relearn how to walk. I don't know if that's because my muscles were all very hyperactivated. It felt like I was walking on the moon, like gravity was very odd, very light. And all of the, bless them, all of the girls were looking at me and with kind of their mouths open. And I said, oh my gosh, what is it? You know? And they said, well, you're glowing. There's light coming from behind your skin and you look blue because that light's coming from behind your skin. And so that lasted for like maybe 30 seconds or so. So not super long. But after that experience, it felt like what they had done is moved out some of the physical ailments that my body may have had and increased my capacity for connection, because meditation after that was never quite the same. I'm able to go much deeper, faster, and I'm much clearer in my communication. And so I think that's what happened in that experience.
So can you tell us about the SoulPod app?
Yes. So the SoulPod app is really what came forward when I was in my recovery. And I love structure. I come from the sciences. And so I wanted to build something that didn't extract the mystical experience from the meditative experience, but rather embraced it. And also gives structure to the awakening process. And I'm very passionate about personalization. So the SoulPod app is going to understand where it is that you're at in your spiritual journey and then place you in a sequence of journeys based around energy centers to a loose degree and walk you through breath work, mantra practice, contemplation, and unfocused expansion. Ultimately helping you build that muscle so that you can guide yourself into these realms of consciousness at will. And really putting power back in the individual's hands to start to turn on their inner technology, to realize that for themselves so that you can start to access all of these answers, all of this wisdom that is yours to access. We just have to wake that system up, because it's latent in most people. And so SoulPod is my offering in that regard.
Does it have guided meditations on there and things like that?
Yes, guided meditations, really powerful breath work that served me deeply in my own journey, and contemplation, reflection. And then the pod part is community. Because for me, when I was awakening, it can be rather isolating. When you're on the front edge of this wave that's coming, and most people don't realize that it's coming, but you're on the front edge of it, it can feel a little isolating. And so one part of the app is also community, where you can connect with other people who are also on this wave, who are also awakening, and ask questions. You know, if you have a meditation and you have this vision or something comes through and you don't understand what it is, because that was my experience too, you have somewhere you can go and ask those questions. And so we love our pod space.
Well, it's been great talking to you. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Simon. This has been really beautiful. Thank you for having me on.
Could you tell the listeners where they could find the SoulPod app and again about your YouTube channel?
Yes, you can find us at soulpodapp.com. You can find us on the App Store, iOS App Store, SoulPod. We're working on Android, so we're working on that. And you can find us on Substack as well at SoulPod and YouTube at SoulPod App. I think those are the most of the places that you can connect in with the community.
Fantastic. And thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Simon.
This week, I was talking to Crystal Cassidy about her near-death experience and her other spiritual experiences. And if you want to find out more about near-death experiences, you could read my book, Verified Near-Death Experiences. It's on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And the audiobook is also on Spotify. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you'll get access to the extended episodes. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.